Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, in the second hour of today's show, I've got regular commentator from Truth News Radio, Josh Jackson, on the line to talk about the whole question of privacy. You know, I've got a few questions about it, and I'd like to dig a little deeper than simply take it for granted what most people think about privacy and what most people think about your rights. Because I think privacy is a subject on its own to be looked at. It's a little bit different to interference by the state, because privacy is more than just the state. It's about your privacy in relation to everyone else and whether we can really have the expectation that we can be totally private in what we do. And in some cases, I think that technology simply facilitates more transparency, and that is an inevitable kind of thing that comes with the evolution of technology and society, is that some things do become less private. But and I'm not sure whether that's a good or a bad thing. I think there's good and bad in it. But I do have on the line Josh Jackson. Josh, welcome back to the show, mate.
G'day, mate. How are you, Harold? And g'day, viewers in America and globally.
Indeed. Look,
viewers, listeners.
Yeah, they view mentally what we say. They can draw pictures in their minds.
Yeah.
Josh, I gather you've done a bit of research into cryptography, but before we get into that technical stuff, I actually want to broach this question, and let me just frame it for you again. You see, privacy is something that we certainly like to have, don't we? But as we know, I mean, anyone out there who's married or in a relationship, we know that privacy can be a little bit difficult sometimes, can't it? I mean, people like to know what other people are doing, but sometimes people don't want to share what they're doing. And sometimes that causes a lot of problems at every level, in the micro level and the macro level. You know what I mean? And, you know, do you let your girlfriend log into your Facebook? I mean, you know, these are all important questions, aren't they? And I think that when you really think about it, there's a lot there that we haven't even broached. I mean, what's your take on all of that?
Well, if I could read something here, this is something that what I constantly get is, well, I believe the government should be allowed to view all my emails, tap my phone calls and view my web history, and for national security concerns. National security, don't you know?
Yeah.
And then they would go on to say, you know, I've got nothing to hide. I don't break the law. I don't write hate emails. I don't participate in any terrorist organizations. I don't leak secrets, information to other countries or terrorists. I don't do any of that. And the most that the governments will get of reading my emails is that's the Tigers won the basketball and I got pissed last night, and so you know, this is the sort of thing. And they say, you know, well, if they're going to stop from reading all my emails, it's going to stop people blowing up my work office building that I work in, then so be it. You know, this is the rationale, and this is the rationale that governments try to play into and say, well, if you haven't got anything to hide, then you shouldn't worry about it. And first of all, to broach that comment, it's really, if they don't have anything to hide, because it can go both ways. Well, okay, if you guys don't have anything to hide, then why do you need all that secrecy from the government? You know, why does the government need all that secrecy? If they're not doing anything wrong, then, you know. So, but this is a fantastic response I got, I saw on Reddit from a guy, and I just want to read it out, and I think it really works well.
Sure.
I live in a country generally assumed to be a dictatorship, one of the Arab Spring countries. I've lived through curfews and have seen the outcomes of the sort of surveillance now being revealed in the US. People here are talking about curfews, aren't realizing that actually what it actually feels like. It isn't about having to go inside and the practicality of that. It's about creating the feeling that everything is being watched. A few points. One, the purpose of the surveillance from the government point of view is to control enemies of the state, not terrorists, people who are conspiring around ideas that would destabilize the status quo. These could be religious ideas, these could be groups like Anon, who are too good with tech for the government's liking. It makes it very easy to know who the people are. It also makes it very simple to control these people. But then, let's say you're a college student and you get in with some people who want to stop farming practices that hurt animals. Say you don't make a plan and you go to the to protest these practices. You get there and wow, the protest is huge. You never would have expected this. You were just goofing off. Well, now everyone who was there is a suspect because everything's being spied on. Even though you technically had the right to protest, you're now considered a dangerous person. With this tech in place, the government doesn't have to put you in jail. They can do something far more sinister. They can just email you a sexy picture you took with a girlfriend. Or they can email you a note saying that they can prove your dad is cheating on his taxes.
Mm.
Or they can threaten to get your dad fired. Mm. All you have to do, the email says, is help them catch your friends in the group. You have to report back every week or your dad might lose his job. So you do. You turn in your friends, and even though they try to keep meetings off-grid, you're reporting on them to protect your dad. Let's say...
Brilliant.
Number, you know, and it just goes on, and I guess instead of reading the whole thing, but it goes on how... I'll just read the second part. Let's say number one goes on, the country is a weird place now, really weird. Pretty soon a movement springs up like Occupy, except it's bigger this time. People are really serious and they are saying that they want a government without this power. I guess people are realizing that that this is a serious deal. You see on the news that tear gas was fired, your friends call you frantic. They're shooting people. Oh, my God, you never signed up for this. You say, screw it. My dad might lose his job, but I won't be responsible for anyone dying. That's going too far. You refuse to report anymore, and you just stop going to meetings. You stay at home and try not to watch the news. 3 days later, police come to your door and arrest you. They confiscate your computer and your phones. They beat you a bit. No one can help you, and so they all just sit quietly. They don't know if they know that if they say anything, they're next. This happened in the country I live in. It's not a joke. And you know, it goes on, there's another couple of chapters, but it really goes on to say, this is what happens in a surveillance state. And if you go and research the DDR, the Deutsche Republik here, the East Berlin, what happened there with the Stasi and how out of control it gets. Everyone becomes paranoid. Everyone thinks, you know, oh, they might be spying on me, he might be spying me. And those things are like bumbling fools compared to the infrastructure that's set up now by the NSA.
So absolutely.
For anyone, yeah, anyone that's willing to say, oh, look, doesn't matter, I don't have anything to hide. Well, the thing is, you don't right now, but suddenly there's a state that comes in that you don't really agree with. Let's say... you don't agree with the carbon taxes, or you do agree with the carbon taxes and someone's in government that doesn't want that, or whatever. It doesn't matter your political leanings. It's that if you disagree with the state at that time, you start getting a lot of hassle.
Yeah, because if you are a threat in any sense, and that doesn't mean criminal activity, a threat to the state can be totally lawful forms of action, such as being a journalist or being involved in protests. But you can be a threat to many people in power. And this is, I'm really glad you made that point, Josh, because I actually made the same point in the first hour. after I played the clip there by William Binney. And what he was talking about was, which is something that Edward Snowden had also highlighted, is that these surveillance systems are not actually so much used to catch the bad guy, you know, the classic bad guy that they're trying to catch. They're not actually used for that purpose. What they're used for is when you've got a suspect that you think is a bad guy, right? For whatever reason, you've already got someone, right? You've already got someone in your sights. You then go into the surveillance database and say, oh, what can we dig up on this person? Oh, okay, yeah, so he's got a conviction for, you know, smacking his wife around. Oh, let's add that to it. That looks bad, doesn't it? And this is what they do, you see. They use it to build a case against someone.
Yeah, or even, oh, he got really angry at a sports game, or
anything.
He was depressed.
Or to give your example.
He's been on depression medication, or he's been, you know, anything.
To give your example, Josh, he got really pissed. Oh, he has an alcohol problem. I got really pissed. That was your example. I've got nothing to hide. All I talk about is how I got pissed and watched the football. Oh, so he's got an alcohol problem, has he? Ah, right.
Yeah.
See, this is what goes on. This is how surveillance data is used in the real world. There's a fantasy that's going around that people buy into, these poor, deluded fools who say, I've got nothing to hide, don't even grasp that that's not the way it works. It's the same with torture. They don't understand.
Yeah.
Torture is used to extract confessions. Torture is not used to find out what really happened. It's used to extract confessions to make the government look like they're powerful and have achieved something. Exactly the same with surveillance data. It's digging up dirt on people so that you can then throw the book at them. And you can make people look bad. Even without a criminal conviction, you can just discredit people by revealing this information.
Yeah. And look, you know, Obama might not do it. The next guy might not do it. But the thing is, once this infrastructure is in place, it's literally a turnkey dictatorship.
Turnkey tyranny.
You know, they just switch it on. Okay, boom. And they've been collecting all this data for years. So, you know, what do you do about it? And that's the real question is what can you do about it?
But I've still got my question at the beginning, which we've skirted around. I'm still concerned about what is privacy? Because privacy works on many, many levels, doesn't it? Many, many levels. Many people want to keep things private from their spouse.
Yeah.
Now, I think we need to examine that. I think we need to take that all in and understand what is legitimate, what isn't legitimate. And I also think that we need to be very careful about saying that we need laws to protect your privacy, because you know what that becomes? That becomes another state mechanism of control, laws to
Absolutely.
Protect your privacy. I don't think we want that.
Absolutely.
I think we do need to be thinking about withdrawing the funding for these multi-billion dollar surveillance operations, but do we really want laws to protect your privacy? And this is where I think we need to understand that privacy is something that we can't always expect to have just because of the nature of the way the world works. But we're going to break, and I'm going to address that again straight after we come back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be chatting with you today, and do stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. We're talking about privacy. We're talking about some of the furphies that are put out there about what surveillance is really for and how it is used. And just before the break there, I was actually asking the question about privacy fundamentally. How much privacy can we legitimately expect? How much of it is like an intrinsic right? And if it's an intrinsic right, what does that mean? How do we protect that right? I tend to think we need to be a little bit more relaxed about it. I think that, you know, if people want to, they can find out things about you. Hackers will be able to hack in. Like, even if it's not a giant, grand, Big Brother system that's orchestrated, people will be able to probe into your affairs if they really want. I mean, private investigators have been around, you know, for hundreds of years. Private investigators can probe into your life and find out all kinds of secrets. And, you know, I think there's a little bit too much that I've seen in the media and proposed legislation to try to stamp out people getting information that actually becomes another type of tyranny. You know, it's the tyranny of litigiousness and the tyranny of sort of trying to protect people's rights when in fact what I believe is important is not empowering the global Big Brother superstructure, not empowering.
I tend to agree very, very much with that statement.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at same goes with the net neutrality. Everyone's up in arms and wants laws about net neutrality when net neutrality has been around without laws.
Yeah.
Quite easily, because if some company starts throttling my internet, I'm just going to choose a different company.
Exactly. I mean, for example, you know the whole scandal about the Murdoch press in the UK hacking into people's phones and that's prompted a whole, you know, demand for sort of legislation to protect people's privacy. But journalists have complained that this new legislation is going to make it really hard for them to actually do anything, right? Because it's not just about hacking into people's phones. It's about sort of protecting people's interests. It's just that big it's the nanny state again. It's the idea, yeah, that the government should come in and protect you and organize everything to make sure that no one can be bad. And that again is the same problem. You know, I believe it's the flip side of the same problem. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, funnily enough, I think the NSA is somehow turning out to be the good guys. Now, hear me out. It's sections of the NSA that are coming out, like Snowden, for instance.
Okay,
was part of that. Then you've got other parts of the NSA who develop the encryption mechanisms that are pretty much going to help us avoid this sort of nanny state without legislation. I mean, you know, it's a real savior is technology and understanding technology and then using that technology. I mean, it literally is very easy to set up an encrypted, system between two people to talk, or two businesses, and businesses do it all the time. Banks do it all the time.
Sure.
It's funny that inside these organizations, a lot of people are coming out to sort of whistleblow or reveal ways of doing things in the past. I mean, PGP was developed in 1990, oh no, when was it? It was even earlier, which is pretty good privacy. It's
indeed
a great encryption technology.
Yeah.
For some reason, that hasn't really taken off, and I don't think it's a reason of people don't want it. I think it's been really forced down a lot. I mean, it was made illegal at first by America, of all places. When it first came
out,
and the guy
that
who invented it got I think imprisoned even. Don't quote me on that, but anyway, he got a lot of trouble for basically under the same thing as dealing in ammunitions almost, because it's a type of they were considering it a type of ammunition.
Well, actually, I've got some queries about that, because if that's so, does that mean that the U.S. government, the NSA, can actually decrypt secure HTTPS connection data? I mean, can they actually do that? Because they can't.
No, because you invent something doesn't mean you've got the key to it. I mean, it's open source. It just means they came up with the maths to send secrets.
But that was made illegal, and so that to me is there's an assumption in there that they therefore can actually read what we do currently send. You know what I'm saying? Like they didn't want us to be able to use this new secret system. So does that mean the current system is not secret at all? In other words, encrypted communications can be decrypted by the NSA. That hasn't been clear to me from any of the statements either by Snowden or any of these people. Can they decrypt HTTPS connections?
No, they can't decrypt SHA-256 yet. They can decrypt some of the earlier ones, like SHA, the first generation, but the later ones. And in fact, Snowden, you can tell that they can't from Snowden's statements with, was it Greenwald? When he contacted Greenwald, he wanted to set up a private, an encrypted messaging between the two.
Okay.
And he had to basically give Greenwald a tutorial on how to do that.
Right.
Because he didn't know. So for Snowden to trust an encrypted network is basically saying, because Snowden knew exactly what they could encrypt and decrypt.
Oh, that's fascinating, isn't it? Yes, look, my understanding of it, I did a bit of reading on this, and it appears that where the information is being intercepted, it's not sort of in the pipe. If you think of a communication as being like you're at one end and you're a recipient at the other end, and there's a pipe connecting you. Well, the information in that pipe cannot actually be decrypted. But when it reaches the other end, it goes through hubs that are actually communication portals. They're actually like very powerful networks that actually allow, for example, Facebook to have instantaneous and very, very, very powerful response times all around the world. How do they do this?
Yeah.
Well, they're using dedicated hubs. They're actually, they've got lines, T1 lines that connect, you know, major nodes all around the world. Now, those dedicated T1 lines, that's what NSA has access to. They don't have access to the general internet traffic, but they have access to those tier one lines because of an arrangement with Verizon and a few other major providers who control those lines. Does that correspond with what you've discovered, Josh?
Yeah, that's right. And they basically just, they don't even decipher it. They don't even do anything with the data. They have keyword
But the point is it's not encrypted at that point. The point is that information that's going over those lines is not encrypted. Like, for example, when it's going over the regular internet, yes, it's encrypted. But once it reaches the hub...
No, not even then. I mean, certain things are, like banking and whenever there's a HTTPS signal.
Well, that's what I was talking about when I was saying, you know, can they decrypt HTTPS messages that you send over email? No, they can't. But when you're on Facebook and you send a message, right, what's actually happening there? Well, your Facebook Facebook doesn't come up on an HTTPS connection. But
no.
Okay, the point I'm making, maybe getting a little bit tongue-tied here trying to explain it, is that there are such things as HTTPS connections, and they are protected. In other words, they cannot be hacked into.
Facebook actually does come under HTTPS as well, so I'm not too sure. But I think a lot of the – I mean, Facebook is part of the dark net, they call it. You've got the light net, which is just basically websites which are open, but anything behind a password – is considered darknet.
I'm just actually looking at my Facebook page right at the moment just to verify. It's not actually on an HTTPS connection. Even when I look at my messages, it's not. And I'm a little bit surprised at that. I had thought it would have been. We're just going to break. We're talking about privacy. We're talking about messaging, encryption. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Get the fruit, but why once living high
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking today with Josh Jackson about privacy and how we can send messages without it being intercepted and whether, in fact, we can. As I said there, my understanding, having read an article on ZDNet, was that, in fact, where the NSA is able to tap into information is on the private networks that that connect hubs. So you've got, you know, a hub for Facebook around the world, different nodes with tier one connections between them. Well, NSA has total access to that, and it is not encrypted at all. They can just grab the information. But I just did notice there, looking at my own Facebook page today, and I'm not on an HTTPS connection at all.
That's weird, because I am. And I tried to get rid of the S, and it just keeps popping back.
Well, that's fascinating, isn't it? That's fascinating.
But look, the thing is that how I consider the net is like this, folks. And this goes back to your core question of privacy. Where do you expect privacy? And I think really is that the people expect privacy is when I have a conversation with you that's not obviously over the radio, but if I have a conversation with you on the street, I expect it to be private, apart from maybe a couple of words. But when people walk past, they might catch a couple of words. But those sort of situations, or if I'm on a phone call with you, I expect it to be private. Or when I'm emailing you, I expect it to be private. I don't expect a third person to be snooping in and out of my affairs and collecting all data on me. And I can understand them wanting to collect data if I'm, under suspicion of drug dealing or something illegal, or I don't know, but whatever legalities they want to throw around. But this sort of broad net stuff, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know where to start of how ludicrous it is. And people are sort of sitting back and going, well, I don't do anything bad, so, you know.
Well, of course, in the rule of law, that sort of much often used and abused term, the rule of law, there have been conventions. And you know, we get back to common law. And I think it's really important to understand that these are laws that have been developed over a long period of time. You know, it wasn't just overnight that they came up with concepts like habeas corpus, etc., right? Now, under the rule of law, as it stands in most Western democracies, is that in order to get that type of information, there has to be what they call a court order, right? In other words, there has to be a prima facie case. And on all these things have clear legal precedents as to what they mean. There has to be probable cause, right? It's the same with search and seizure. And that goes back to the foundations of the US Constitution. You know, no search and seizure without probable cause. That goes back to the founding fathers of the United States. It's the same concept, whether we're talking about physically searching you or whether we're talking about snooping on your conversations. It's the same basic concept, isn't it? There has to be probable cause. In other words, you can't just go on general fishing expeditions because you just want to know what everyone's talking about in case later you might need that information. But probable cause is important. But with the NSA and the legislation that was put in place to allow the PRISM program, what they did is they created these secret courts. I mean, isn't it incredible? They created this thing called the FISA court. And what was this? Well, it was actually like a shadow court, right? You know, you have your regular courts. This is a secret court where everything's heard in secret. And within that secret court, we don't even know what they say, right? Because they can't tell us because it's secret, right? But somewhere they've got this thing called a court that makes a decision that you'll never know about that lets them do whatever they want.
Yeah, it's really a joke. It really is. It's despicable. So I think, one thing that people always find confusing is, you know, what is encryption anyway? What is it? And I want to try and tackle that question. And, I've, you know, gone, seen a lecture where it's taken literally weeks to explain it. But
I'm a little weak on that topic myself, so hopefully you'll educate me in the process.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the basis of encryption, if we take it right down to simple method, is taking every letter of the alphabet and shifting it by one letter. So A becomes B, B becomes C, D becomes, and so on and so on.
Sure.
So we then, if you write a message and you have a key, which is the cipher, you have this key which says, well, shift every letter by one. That's the key. And when you get this message, it looks like a jumbly mess, but if you look at the key and then every letter back, now this is a very, very, very primitive form of encryption which can be cracked in a second, because what they figured out is a lot of words use use letters more often than other letters. So E's and A's and vowels come up very often, and so you can decipher a cipher by figuring out how many times letters repeat themselves. So people were, during the wars, able to decrypt these messages quite easily. So what came along was this concept of public-private key encryption later on, and this is a bit more of a tricky one, but I'll try to explain it quite easily, and I found a really good video that does this. So if verbally you don't get it, because it's using colors to explain this, we'll link to a video.
Sure.
On the website, truthnews.com.au. So the concept of encryption is basically you need something, a lock. A lock is a one-way thing. It's easy to open. It's easy if you've got a key, but it's hard to create the key, right? So if we look at colors, for instance, we have two people. We have Alice and Bob. And these people want to have a private color, a shared private color, for instance. So a private, just like a private message, but they want a shared private color. The problem is we have this third person called Eve, which is always listening. We have Eve, and she's eavesdropping. So, and you kind of always have to imagine that she's always eavesdropping. So what you get is, with colors, and why I'm using colors is it's quite easy to mix two colors and get a third color, right?
Sure.
But it's very hard with that third color to try and figure out the two colors that were used. So if you mix two colors together, get a third color, okay, we can see that color. It's very easy to verify that that's what that color is, but it's very hard to determine the two colors that made up that color. So let's
say...
Well,
like I say, purple is made of red and blue.
Yeah, but how much red and how much blue?
Okay.
And maybe you put a little bit of black in there. And
okay.
Maybe you put some other two colors in there that made up blue, like a type of blue. And, you know, you can... But let's just try and keep it simple.
Sure.
But yeah. So what everyone does is decide on a common public color. So they all decide on yellow. Bob and Alice decide on yellow. The thing is, now Eve knows it's yellow too. Next, Alice and Bob both select a random private color. They don't tell anyone about this. They just create, maybe it's blue, maybe it's pink. They select each a random color. They don't need to agree on the same color. It's just neither Bob or Alice know of each other's color.
Sure.
The private color. They then mix the private colors with the public color yellow together. So each Bob and Alice have this new mix color, which then they send to each other. On the way, of course, Eve grabs that. So we'll get back to this on the other side of this message, but
we certainly will.
Hopefully you're keeping up with me here.
Yes, have you got the URL for that so people listening live can quickly check that?
I have, yeah.
Just quickly read it out.
Not right now, but after.
Okay, we'll bring it to you right after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And we're discussing encryption, public key, private key encryption, what it really means, how it works. Josh has been giving us an example here, a little tutorial that he's found. And Josh, have you got the URL there for our live feed listeners? Of course, we will have this on the show notes for those who get the podcast. But for those listening live on the radio, Josh, do you have a quick link there or maybe a Google phrase they could put in?
Yeah, sure. If you go to, I'm just making a short URL here, bit.ly, B-I-T-L-Y, and then go to, so bit.ly/1asfMCI. So that's bit.ly/1AS for Sam, F for Fred, capital M for Mary, CI.
Is there a phrase they can Google it as well?
Yeah, if you Google public key cryptography color.
Okay, terrific.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we're going through the color example there. So you're basically saying that there's a public color and then there's private colors. And this is then used, the public and the private key are merged in some way.
That's right. So Alice and Bob basically take the public color that everyone knows and their private color and mix them together to get a third color, They're both different. Now, what Alice and Bob do is send that mixed color. Alice keeps her private color but sends the mixed color to Bob, and Bob keeps his private color and sends the mixed color to Alice.
Okay.
So now, what has Eve got? Eve, the eavesdropper. Eve's got Bob and Alice's original public color, which is the yellow, and she's got both the mixtures from Alice and Bob. But what she can't figure out is the private color, that because no one sent that. They haven't sent that. They haven't published it. They haven't done anything. So, and this is where the heart of the trick comes in. How do now Alice and Bob figure out the common color? What they do is they get the mixed color, and they mix in the original private color of that they've each got into that mixture. And what will happen there is they'll get the that'll arrive at the same color that they've both got. So they'll all of a sudden receive the same color. So they mix the mixed color that they've sent to each other with the original private color, and they'll get some murky, crappy color, but it'll both be the same. Bob and Alice will have the exact same color. Eve, on the other hand, can't get that color because she doesn't know these private colors. She doesn't know these private keys. Let's say again,
they mix their own private color. Let's say Bob has got his private color is green, Alice's private color is blue, and the public color is yellow.
Yes.
Okay, so Bob has green. So Bob merges green and blue, green and yellow, and he's got his green-yellow mixture.
Yep.
Alice has her blue-yellow mixture, right?
Yeah.
So they've both got their little color mixes there. Now Bob then sends his mix to Alice.
Yep.
And then what does she do again? Explain it again.
And
what does she do?
Alice sends her mix to Bob.
Okay, fine. And then what happens?
So they've both got each other's mixes. They then take their original private keys and add them to the mix. And that mix will then turn into the same color on both sides.
Okay, so they add another third color. It's a bit hard, actually. I'm not quite getting it, to be honest with you, and I'm going to have to study it myself. I sort of get the logic of what you're saying. Although in the real world, it wouldn't work. If you're using paint, you'd just end up with different colors. They wouldn't be the same.
No, they would, because actually, what you're getting is this: you're mixing the three of the same colors together.
I see. You would. You're right. Yeah, you would get the same color. Yeah, you'd get red. You'd get blue, yellow, and green on both sides, which would merge to the same color.
Doesn't know any of the private keys. any of the private colours.
So she wouldn't be able to get that.
Yeah. So that was the genius of figuring out how do you send a key to someone else without Eve getting the key? Because this was the thing in the war, or when people wanted to send messages to each other or countries, they would have this encrypted message, but they also have to get the key to them without the key being intercepted. But with this trick, you don't need to send a key.
Can I just clarify it again for myself and maybe for listeners? With this public key, private key form of communication, the encryption is different each time based on who I'm talking to, because it can't be the same encryption used globally, because then the same key would work for everyone. The key is dependent on your private key and my public key, right? And sorry, my private key and the public key and your private key and the public key. That creates a unique encryption of every communication. It's not just an encryption. It's a unique encryption based on your private key and my private key that allows us to talk to each other.
That's right. And the good thing is I can, when you use this in email, you can put your public key out there for everyone to see. And as soon as someone's got that public key, they can then take that, encrypt a message, send it to me, and only I can decipher it. So the thing is, it's kind of easy. It's kind of like a Rubik's Cube. It's easy to verify that it's been fixed, that it's been solved, the puzzle, but it's hard to solve the puzzle. So
yes,
when, you know, for me, I get that, I get this encrypted message, and it's easy for me to because I've got the private key, so I can mix it in there, verify that it's right, and whereas other people, just it'll just take them forever. More than the universe has been around.
And if I just give another clarifying example of this, now correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but as I understand it, there are in terms of wireless networks, there are two very common ones you'll see if you're using your computer and you just have a look at what wireless networks are available. Now, the older one, which is still very, very common, is called the WEP key, W-E-P, and the newer one is called W-P-A. Now, in my understanding, WEP is actually the older type of encryption, the one you're saying is very easy to crack because it doesn't actually have a public key, private key, because WEP keys can be cracked in about 10 seconds. I mean, it is frighteningly easy to crack a WEP key. I don't know if you've ever done it. I'm not encouraging listeners to do it because it is actually illegal, but it is ridiculously easy. You should be aware. Ooh, naughty boy. Naughty boy. Hopefully no one listened into that, because that could go on your record, Josh.
No, but I did it on my own.
Well, we cut that off. We just cut it off at the point where you said, I did it. I did it. That's the information we keep, you see. The point is that your communications aren't safe. If you're using WEP, anyone can hack into you. It's so ridiculous.
No, and originally there was, originally when wireless first came out, routers by default didn't have a key, and you had to go in there and set a password up. Of course, nowadays they all come with a password that's already by default on, and you just check the bottom of your router to see it, and you can change it if you want. But after that, WEP came in. So first there was nothing, then there was WEP.
Yes.
And a lot of the thing that was scary, people could just rock up in front of a store, like let's say a department store,
yeah,
that used WEP to transfer credit card details from the cash register to their server in the back of the store, and people would just sit there just sucking up all that information.
Siphoning up.
And obviously, that's a little
more complicated than just cracking the password for the router, which is what you did. I mean, you just basically had to get access to the router. You weren't deciphering the information that's coming through. But with the WEP key, you can potentially do that. Is that correct? Once you have the WEP key, you can potentially, every packet of information can be deciphered.
Yeah, I mean, these WEP keys are actually cracked by listening into packets of encrypted information. So
yes,
your a third computer sits there on this network, just any data that flows across this web key, you're just taking and listening to these packets, and you slowly, and the computer program slowly deciphers the web cipher, which is pretty easy to crack. But the new one is quite difficult, but still can be actually.
Yeah, but it takes more computer cycles, and it takes a bit more of a geeky kind of bent to get into it.
But that's the thing. A lot of people, a friend of mine actually that I'm, well, not really a friend, but it's a guy I know, he did an art project where he basically hacked into street surveillance networks.
Really?
And just started broadcasting what he could see just to show how. And they were using the other encryption, and he basically set up some EC2 cycles on the Amazon infrastructure to figure out the web key. It took him all of, I don't know, 10 minutes of crunching a whole heap of servers just to decipher these things. But
look, it's incredible. We just about used up the whole hour now, and unfortunately I didn't really get into some of the meat I wanted to get into with you, but I think it was really interesting to have that little tutorial there on internet security. Josh, it's been great having you on today, mate.
Yeah, look, one last message for the viewers. Yeah. Just if you want some privacy, just assume that everything on the internet is being listened to unless you're using encryption.
Yeah. And just get used to it, but don't empower the Big Brother state. You know, don't be stupid with this idea of sitting back and letting them protect us. Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you. Over and out from Truth News Radio.
Adios.